You are beginning a shift in the emergency department. Your first patient, a 24-year-old graduate student, arrives via ambulance with an infusion of normal saline already running. Their heart rate is 120 and blood pressure is 85 over 45. You uncover that they were out hiking for the past 6 hours on a clear, hot day. You think to your own experience hiking and are impressed that you've never gotten this ill. What has helped you stay well on a hike, and how could you help your patient hike more safely? Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing renal physiology from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Outline the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, including sensors, factors that control it, sources of hormone release, and the actions of each hormone. 2. Describe the mechanisms by which the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system regulates blood pressure. And 3. Compare and contrast tubular glomerular feedback with the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Part 1. What is the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, and why is it important? Well, simply stated, it starts with renin. Renin is an enzyme released by the kidneys that ultimately leads to the formation of the vasoactive hormone angiotensin II, which in turn stimulates the release of the hormone aldosterone from the adrenal cortex. Angiotensin II and aldosterone act in a number of ways to enhance renal tubular sodium reabsorption, increase systemic vascular tone, stimulate salt appetite, thirst, and antidiuretic hormone to defend our extracellular fluid volume and increase blood volume and blood pressure. Now let's dig a little deeper. Part 2. What are the elements of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, and where are they? Again, it begins with renin. Renin is stored and secreted by the juxtaglomerular, or JG, cells of the juxtaglomerular apparatus, a specialized part of the nephron that acts as a blood volume and blood pressure sensor. JG cells themselves are modified smooth muscle cells of the afferent arteriole, which supplies each glomerulus with blood, so it's a major control point of glomerular filtration. In the juxtaglomerular apparatus, there are three ways to stimulate renin secretion. The first way is decreased blood pressure, as sensed by the baroreceptors of the afferent arteriole. A second way that renin secretion is stimulated relates to sodium chloride, or salt, delivery to the macula densa cells, a specialized area of the nephron at the end of Henle's loop and the start of the distal nephron. If there is decreased sodium chloride or salt delivery to the macula densa cells, this will suggest there is less salt and hence less volume in the body and stimulate renin secretion. Lastly, a third way is through an increase in sympathetic tone at the afferent arteriole. Here's a question for you. Based on the three mechanisms we just discussed, what do you think are the three components of the juxtaglomerular apparatus? The juxtaglomerular apparatus includes the afferent arteriole, the JG cells, and the macula densa. Okay, let's keep moving through the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, and back to renin. So once renin is secreted, it circulates. When it reaches the liver, the enzyme renin will cleave a substance called angiotensinogen, synthesized in the liver, into angiotensin 1. Next, circulating angiotensin 1 finds its way to the lungs, where the angiotensin-converting enzyme, also known as ACE, converts angiotensin 1 into the vasoactive hormone angiotensin 2. We'll discuss angiotensin 2's many effects later in this episode. However, to finish the story of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, it's important to note that angiotensin 2 stimulates release of the hormone aldosterone from the adrenal gland. Both angiotensin II and aldosterone have important actions to expand blood volume. Angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, or ACE inhibitors, are used to treat a number of clinical conditions, including hypertension. When ACE is inhibited, the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system cannot convert angiotensin I into angiotensin II, inhibiting the system's ability to expand blood volume and increase blood pressure. Here's another question for you. Thinking back on your patient who went hiking, what enzyme could have helped maintain their blood volume and blood pressure? That's right, renin. And now we'll go in more depth on this answer. Part 3. What stimulates the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system to activate? Why is renin secreted? Well, because with blood volume loss, all of the elements of the juxtaglomerular apparatus will be triggered. The afferent arterial or blood pressure will be lower, there will be less salt delivery to the macula densa, and there will be increased sympathetic tone. All of these are stimuli for the kidney to secrete renin. This could be for physiologic reasons, such as with a fun hike, or for pathologic reasons, as with hemorrhage or vomiting and diarrhea. Additionally, any decrease in renal perfusion or drop in renal blood flow to the afferent arterial can stimulate renin, such as with congestive heart failure with less cardiac output, or from something more focal, like renal artery stenosis. Notably, these stimuli can be flipped around to see how high blood pressure or high volume states may suppress renin secretion and the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Part 4. Renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system effects. Actions of angiotensin II and aldosterone. Now that we know what sets off the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, let's talk a bit more about angiotensin II now. Angiotensin II increases blood pressure and extracellular volume through multiple mechanisms. Specifically, its effects include mechanisms within the kidney itself, as well as those that affect the entire body. First, let's review the systemic effects. The first effect to know is systemic arterial vasoconstriction. The second is stimulating thirst in the hypothalamus. Angiotensin II is what makes water on a hike so refreshing. And the third is the effect of assisting release of antidiuretic hormone from the posterior pituitary gland, a hormone that stimulates water reabsorption in the kidney. Angiotensin II's primarily renal effects include, first, stimulating sodium and water reabsorption in the proximal convoluted tubule. It achieves this through enhancing activity of the sodium-hydrogen exchanger as well as other sodium transporters in the proximal convoluted tubule. It also enhances activity of the sodium-potassium ATPase in the basolateral membrane, the main driver of sodium reabsorption all along the nephron. Second, angiotensin II stimulates release of aldosterone, which, as we'll describe in a moment, enhances sodium reabsorption in the distal nephron. And last but not least, we mentioned angiotensin II is a systemic vasoconstrictor. It also specifically and preferentially constricts the efferent arterial relative to its constriction of the afferent arterial. This serves to maintain GFR. Why would it do this? Wouldn't this increase urine output and decrease blood volume? Well, don't forget all its other effects too. All of these effects are working together, and by enhancing sodium and water reabsorption all along the nephron, directly in the proximal convoluted tubule, and through aldosterone and ADH, most of the volume and salt that is filtered is reabsorbed right back. Then, by constricting the efferent arterial, angiotensin II is allowing us to maintain excretion of waste products and toxins in these high-stakes contexts. The main takeaway here is that all of these angiotensin II effects work together to maintain blood pressure and extracellular fluid volume and GFR in the setting of hypovolemia. Now, the last remaining player in the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system is aldosterone. Like angiotensin II, it has a number of effects which work to maintain blood volume and blood pressure. Aldosterone stimulates sodium reabsorption in the cortical collecting duct of the nephron in a cell type called the principal cell. In the principal cell, it increases the number of luminal absorbing sodium channels. Aldosterone also increases the gradient for sodium reabsorption through activation of the sodium-potassium ATPase, which is the driver for the sodium reabsorption through the channels. Since water follows sodium, this preserves our blood volume. Additionally, aldosterone stimulates sodium and water absorption by the gut, decreases salt concentration and losses in sweat, and stimulates a high salt appetite and makes that trail mix and cheese on a hike taste amazing through changing the salt concentration in saliva. Of note, aldosterone has some effects independent of its actions to increase blood volume and blood pressure. These effects include 1. Increasing renal potassium excretion through enhancing potassium secretion in the same principal cells just mentioned in the cortical collecting duct, and 2. Increasing renal proton or H+ excretion by stimulating the H+ ATPase in the alpha intercalated cells of the collecting duct. This will assist in acid excretion and raise the arterial pH. These last two effects of aldosterone are not critical for, and in fact, not related to its role in the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. The renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system is for volume regulation. It's just that aldosterone can be stimulated for blood volume regulation purposes and also for other reasons, such as for purposes related to potassium regulation. Understanding all of aldosterone's effects becomes important in clinical contexts when recognizing the impacts of excess or deficiency of aldosterone. Let's stop here for a quick review question. Primary hyperaldosteronism is a condition that occurs, for example, when an aldosterone-secreting adrenal gland tumor develops. What would you expect to see in a patient with an aldosterone-secreting adrenal gland tumor? That's right. Increased blood volume and hypertension would be major presenting symptoms. Because aldosterone enhances sodium reabsorption and sodium appetite, patients will develop volume excess, recognizing water will follow sodium for osmotic reasons. Other findings might include hypokalemia and an elevated arterial pH, or metabolic alkalemia. Part 5, counter-regulators such as natriuretic peptides that oppose the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. We've been focusing this episode so far on blood volume and blood pressure regulation on the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. As in any good regulatory system, there must be counter-regulators to keep it in check. Atrial natriuretic peptide, or ANP, and brain natriuretic peptide, or BNP, are two hormones that counteract the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. When increased blood volume leads to stretching of the cardiac atria, ANP is released into the circulation. Similarly, when cardiac ventricle myocytes are stretched, BNP will be released. ANP and BNP will counteract renin, both by direct inhibition as well as through systemic vasodilation. As their names imply, they also inhibit sodium and water reabsorption at various points in the nephron, assisting in natriuresis, or salt and water excretion. Let's stop here for a quick question. What effect do you think natriuretic peptides will have on renin secretion and on GFR? The answer is that natriuretic peptides decrease renin secretion and increase GFR, promoting the loss of salt and water, or diuresis. Part 6, tubular glomerular feedback and the myogenic response. Before we conclude this episode, I want to review additional mechanisms our kidneys have in maintaining blood pressure and blood volume when challenged, namely the tubular glomerular feedback and myogenic response. Unlike the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, which is adapted for more long-term, hours-to-days responses, these mechanisms are short-term responses. They help to keep renal blood flow and glomerular filtration rate stable in the setting of moment-to-moment fluctuations. For example, if you are out on a long hike and drank a half liter of water and ate a hefty portion of trail mix, your body would want to preserve such intake. These feedback mechanisms are what helps your body to do exactly that. Without these mechanisms, after a sudden bolus of intake, your kidneys might simply excrete out the salt and the water too hastily. These mechanisms recognize that our bodies may not actually want to have hasty responses to a sudden change of context and aim to keep things stable moment to moment. Tubular glomerular feedback is considered an autoregulatory mechanism as it is completely intrarenal and hence autoregulatory. As noted, it helps to maintain a stable renal blood flow and GFR. The key sensors for this mechanism are the same macula densa cells, which are located right near the start of the distal nephron. These cells are salt sensors, and they are able to detect how much sodium chloride is in the tubular lumen at this nephron segment. When salt content is low, macula densa cells will stimulate renin secretion from the JG cells. Macula densa cells also directly stimulate vasoconstriction or vasodilation of the afferent arteriole. It does this as part of the tubular glomerular feedback mechanism. For example, after a snack during a hike, there will be a sudden increase in salt delivery to your macula densa. Since this is a sudden change, the macula densa senses this change and stimulates vasoconstriction of the afferent arteriole. What this does is it limits GFR, recognizing that the high salt content may not be from a high volume state, and the vasoconstriction mitigates how much salt losses and volume losses the kidney suffers from in this context. It's a good thing, because during that hike we could use all the salt and volume we can get. Thus, as the GFR goes back down to the previous level prior to the salt load, the macula densa salt load also returns to the previous level, and the vasoconstrictive signal goes away. This is a fast, sudden response, unlike the way the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system works. The second autoregulatory mechanism to maintain a stable GFR and renal blood flow is called the myogenic, or stretch response. Now, back to that hike again. After your fluid and salt intake, the blood pressure within your renal arteries will become relatively increased compared to the prior level. This increase causes the compliant walls of the vessels to stretch. In the afferent arteriole, such stretch will result in smooth muscle contraction of the afferent arteriolar wall, causing renal blood flow and GFR to remain relatively stable despite the sudden increase in volume. Conversely, if there were a sudden decrease in blood pressure, the vascular smooth muscle in the afferent arterial wall will relax, leading to afferent vasodilation and sustained renal blood flow and GFR in the face of a sudden change in the other direction. In summary, both the tubular glomerular feedback system and the myogenic mechanisms help regulate renal blood flow and GFR on a moment-to-moment basis and keep them stable rather than allowing hasty changes. In contrast, the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system is a multi-system mechanism using hormones that help promote sustained responses of the body to regulate blood pressure and blood volume. Let's try one more question before we wrap up this episode. When high salt flow is detected by the macula densa cells, what effect will the juxtaglomerular cells have on the renal arterioles and on the GFR? The juxtaglomerular cells will stimulate vasoconstriction of the afferent arterioles, and they will bring the GFR back down to its previous baseline level to maintain a stable GFR. So let's see if we've completed our goals for this session. After each question, you may want to hit the pause button to give yourself time to think of the answers. First, can you outline the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, including sensors, factors that control it, sources of hormone release, and the actions of each hormone? Okay, let's do a quick review. Renin is secreted by the JG cells, which are modified smooth muscle cells of the afferent arteriole. It is secreted in response to low blood pressure or low blood volume, as detected by the afferent arteriole baroreceptors, low salt delivery to the macula densa, and or high sympathetic activity of the afferent arteriole. Renin is an enzyme that converts angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2, which in turn stimulates the adrenal gland to secrete aldosterone. Both angiotensin 2 and aldosterone, through a series of mechanisms, work to increase blood pressure and increase blood volume. Second, can you describe the mechanisms by which the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system regulates blood pressure? Okay, so through angiotensin 2 and aldosterone, the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system causes systemic vasoconstriction, increased sodium and water reabsorption all along the nephron, and increased salt appetite and thirst. Lastly, can you compare and contrast tubular glomerular feedback with the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system? Both tubular glomerular feedback and myogenic mechanisms help regulate renal blood flow and GFR on a moment-by-moment basis and keep them stable, rather than allowing hasty changes. Whereas the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system is a multi-system mechanism promoting sustained responses to regulate blood pressure and blood volume. And that's it. Well done. Armed with your newfound knowledge of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, let's revisit our patient story from the start of this episode. You recall your patient who came in severely hypovolemic after hiking on a hot day. You think about your own experiences hiking and wonder why you've never gotten this ill, and how could you help your patient hike more safely? You reflect that your kidneys help maintain blood pressure and blood volume through the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Changes in blood volume and blood pressure are indirectly detected by macula densa cells, which sense changes in the delivery of sodium. Juxtaglomerular, or JG cells, which are modified smooth muscle cells in the afferent arteriole, They release renin when stimulated, which leads to angiotensin II and aldosterone production, which then raise blood pressure and blood volume. Angiotensin II stimulates thirst, and aldosterone stimulates salt appetite and help make snacks and water feel so refreshing on hikes. Ensuring regular access to and intake of fluid and salt on a hike could have helped your patient avoid their current situation, allowing the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system to work and respond helps us through many physical stresses. And that's all I have for the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Thanks for joining me. If you liked this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmlerx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Safe travels!